Hello, Marvelites! You are listening to a special This Week in Marvel Unlimited Reading Club episode. I'm Ryan Panagos, aka Agent M.
And I am CB Cebulski, your editor-in-chief.
Yes. So, all year long, we have been doing these Reading Club episodes. We use Marvel Unlimited as our basis. Every single story we talk about is available on the subscription service, and you can read it anywhere you like. We pull from them. We read the stories. We want you to read the stories, and we talk about them together. It's really fun. So we've been doing this all year long. We started. How crazy is it that we started with Marvel Comics number one and talking about that, and now Marvel Comics 1000 is in people's hands?
I know, it's crazy, huh?
It's so good too.
It really is. And we could not be prouder of how that book came out. Tom Brevoort and the editorial team and all the creators involved, you know, just really gave their all and created something truly special.
Heck yeah! So we are discussing a couple of books because now we are in the aughts. We're talking about awesome events of the aughts.
Yes.
And this one was difficult for me, honestly, to pick what we were going to talk about. My favorite event is Secret Invasion.
Yep.
I think because of just the timing for me.
Yep.
But we have three consecutive years of events that we're going to talk about. House of M by Brian Michael Bendis and Olivier Coipel. Civil War by Mark Miller and Steve McNiven. And World War Hulk by Greg Pak and John Romita Jr. That's 2005, six, no, it's two, so maybe it's not consecutive years. House of M was 2000, so it's 2005, 2007, 2008. All right, so before we get into these events, CB, there's a question I've been asking. What like comes to mind when we bring up Marvel in this decade, in the 2000s?
You know, for me, it was a really special time, and I have so many fond memories around this period because, you know, that's when I started at Marvel, you know, full time. And I came up and I joined the Ultimate office. So I wasn't there right from the beginning. I remember being a fan and reading a lot of those books. And like, you know, when the Ultimate started coming out, Miller and Hitch just blew me away. I remember just sitting with my friends and discussing Ultimate Spider-Man 13 for hours, the reveal of Mary Jane so early.
That was on my list for us to potentially talk about this episode.
Yeah. And then I came in and joined Marvel and joined Ralph Macchio's team and the Ultimate office right after that. It really was a heck of a lot of fun to be around at that point. And so many of those stories that came out of this time period, you can see directly reflected in a lot of the other Marvel properties, be it in the films or in the games or in the animation, because they pull a lot of the different influences from the comics of this period.
Yeah, very influential. Even now, in the current decade we're in, you're seeing that hitting screens and hitting games. It's pretty cool. All right, we're going to dive into now House of M. It's an 8-issue limited series. First issue is June 1st, 2005, and it goes through October 26th of that year. It is by Brian Michael Bendis, Olivier Coipel, Tim Townsend, John Dell, Frank Darmada, Chris Eliopoulos, and those covers by Asad Rabiq.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, phenomenal.
I mean, like, that is, I think, an important part of an event is the cover.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the treatment, the art, a mix of the two. How important is that from an editorial standpoint?
You know, just covers are so important to so many comics because it is the first thing that people see. And it has to entice them to pick up the book. And there's that constant debate about, should it be a pinup cover? Should it be a storytelling cover? What's the iconography that we should use? What's the best way to catch people's eyes in terms of color schemes? And, you know, when you do these events, it's of the utmost importance because it has to be something extra special. Usually you're on a special cover stock, people paying a little bit more for the issue. You want it to be something really reflective of what's going on in the interiors of the books. And the stuff that Essa did for those covers and the logo itself really stood out, too, on House of M.
Yeah. So you lead into House of M, like part of what an event book has is like there's story that leads up to it. There's events that are important to this in many cases. We have Avengers Disassembled 500 through 503 of the Avengers book. That was in mid-late 2004. That was really like very crucial to the House of M story.
Yep.
And that sees Scarlet Witch sort of fall apart and lose control of her powers and destroy the Avengers.
Yeah. And, you know, it just, that issue itself was a really sad issue to see, you know, Avengers disassembled, but to see the actual destruction of these Avengers, these all-powerful heroes that we know and love at their worst moment. And, you know, just, it really set up things so nicely for House of M. It put them in a different position, had people talking, it had them guessing what's going to happen next. Oh, you're not going to have to go into the event to figure out where it all ends.
Yeah. And, you know, it's Avengers characters, a mutant problem in a lot of ways. So it felt natural to have them come together. What is it like planning an event like this, particularly something like, you know, your House of M?
You know, it's a bear. It's never easy, you know. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, but I have to say, you know, when it comes to these events, the editor on you know, two of these was Tom Brevoort, and he's, you know, the executive editor here for a reason. He's been doing this longer than any of us, and he can just keep things straight in his head like nobody's business, and Tom makes it look easy. And at this point, you know, Brian Bendis had been writing for us for a while, and he was used to these multiple character casts. So, you know, putting their two big brains together really made House of M, from what I recall, a little bit easier than some of the other events that we've been through. And it wasn't an event that we knew exactly where the core was going to be. We knew the beginning, the middle, and the end. And it didn't have as many tie-ins, I think, as some of the other ones. So it was a little bit easier to coordinate.
Yeah. And of course, Levay, art on this book, just from the fashion to the world building to those big, big moments, sort of unparalleled in terms of the level.
Yeah, and nobody can make characters speak through facial expression and body language like Olivier. He's one of the best. He makes it seem so natural and so seamless, and he doesn't use a lot of reference. It all comes from just people watching and things he has in his brain that he can recreate, just how people walk and talk and move and act, you know, through his pencil. It's just insane. And House of M is one of the best examples of him bringing all his skills to life.
Yeah. I want to go through a quick issue by issue rundown. And as I'm going through issue number one and thinking about Olivier's art, there's one panel of Quicksilver who is like freaking out at Magneto about what's going on with Scarlet Witch. Yep. And he's moving so fast. And that one panel, and Magneto's like, slow down. You know I can't understand you when you move that fast. And it's such a, like, of course. Yeah. It's such a perfect storytelling beat.
Yeah, the ultimate ADD, Quicksilver.
So number one sets up our stakes. Wanda, she's not well. Magneto, devastated on a number of levels. I mean, he's walking around the ruins of Genosha. The Avengers and the X-Men are coming together to figure out what they can do for Wanda and to Wanda. Like, there's this big debate going around them, and it ends with the world going white, Peter Parker waking up next to Gwen Stacy, and their baby is crying, which is such a jaw drop. That's how you finish a first issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. You have any favorite moments from that issue?
You know, I just, I'm never too keen on setup. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of times stories need to be new reader friendly. And, you know, that's very important, especially in an event. And you really want to get into the meat very quickly. But Brian did such a beautiful job of, in the limited space that he had in that issue, is, you know, making the characters' stakes known, showing what the debate is, showing who's on what side, showing how much they care about Wanda, because she's friends to so many people in that book. And the twist with the white event just came so suddenly and so quickly that it really was such a well-paced issue, and it really brought people in the stores, I think, really helped out. You know, with future issues, people knew right away what they were getting. Was, oh, this is how this is going to move. Oh, I'm in.
Yeah. And so number two is our tour of the world. That is the, like, getting us into, you know, this book right away. It reminds me of the second issue of Secret Wars, which would come like a decade later. And we're getting this amazing tour of this new universe. And you're like, wait, no, I want to stop over here. I want to stop over here. There's so much cool stuff. Characters are ups and downs and changes. Ends with Wolverine waking up confused and aggressive. He remembers.
Yeah.
Do you recall whose idea it was for having Wolverine be that first character?
I don't. Mm. I don't remember. Yeah. You know,
it's so brilliant.
It really was. And you're just like, oh, man, the story possibilities that could come out of just that one beat were endless.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one thing I do remember from that issue, though, is, you know, and it was something that Joe Quesada was pretty adamant about at the time, is that this was the event where we had to show Carol Danvers becoming the hero that we knew she could be, that she deserved to be. You know, it was really, you know, Carol had been such a background kind of character for so, so long, parts of different teams, but she had Marvel in her name. And Joe said, this is a story where we have to show her become the hero that the Marvel Universe needs, you know. And I think the second issue is particularly where it established her, did a really good job of setting that stage.
That's so cool. I had never heard that before. Number three opens with one of my favorite scenes of the series. It's Wolverine, like, not saying a word. And then he's like, this is wrong. I don't like this. He jumps off of the helicarrier, backwards without a word. It's so good.
Yep.
And then him racing around trying to figure out what's going on, and ends with this amazing surprise. Cloak shows up and opens up. Hawkeye's there, which is great because Hawkeye had been killed by Wanda, you know, 6-8 months before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, so good.
And, you know, I think I'm a fan of a lot of the, second tier characters, so to speak, at Marvel. The characters that never really had their own mainstream series. And Cloak and Dagger are two of my favorite characters ever. They always will be. And this was the series where I think a lot of people who kind of wrote off Cloak and Dagger as a joke, especially in this issue, went, oh my God, they're cool. Because the way that Brian used Cloak's powers and the way that he used Dagger in, to offset Cloak, and the way that Olivier drew them, you know, the way the cloak would appear, or, you know, just almost teleport out of different places, or the cloak would open to these masses of darkness. It was just brilliant.
Yeah. Number four is our introduction to Layla Miller and her unlocking people's memories. Yeah. You got the Rebels, Luke Cage with those cornrows, the braids, a very specific choice, which I'm all for. I love Emma's reaction, though, in particular, when she gets everything revealed to her, that fury and that rage, and she's like, I'm married to Scott, and like this whole there's just so much there.
Again, the facial expressions that Olivier gave to those characters.
Yeah.
And Layla Miller, I mean, amazing creation, and every event should have something cool that comes out of it. And Layla came out of this, and she had such a run in the Marvel Universe after this, in books like X-Factor, where Peter David was able to use her to such great effect. And it's just like little things that you never know where they're going to take you, and characters that you build and hope that someone's going to glom onto, that, you know, Brian created her and Peter took her, and she just became such an integral part of the universe for so many years.
Heck yeah. Number five is that big, great unlocking issue going around grabbing Cyclops and Kitty and Doctor Strange. And, you know, it's like boom, 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 boom. And it's so smart because you don't have time to sit with anything. It's just happening so fast. And it's also the most heartbreaking of the series, because when you get to Peter Parker, you like they have to take away his perfect world.
Yeah,
it's brutal. And when he runs screaming and crying and Wolverine has to go up to talk to him, crushes me every time I read it. It's so like Logan's just like, I'll go talk to him.
Yeah.
You're like, he's the only one who can do it.
And we've known these characters our whole lives. You know, we've always rooted for Peter. Here he got what he wanted. And we as fans wanted him to have that, you know. But, you know, he couldn't have it because the story has to continue.
Yeah. And then it ends with Xavier's gravestone. My God. Six is the big party at Magneto's place, which really lets Olivier go bananas.
Yes, it just took the words right out of my mouth. The way that he was able to design those characters, the mood he created, them interacting in the costumes that he gave them, just so much fun stuff.
Yeah, especially like the royal outfits for, you know, whether it's the House of M or the other houses that come in, to like Namor and everybody else, Doom and T'Challa, and like, oh, it's so great. And then, you know, you have to have these big moments, right? Like these giant events have to have something. What the hell is that? And you have the Rebels throw a Sentinel at Magneto. Like there's that beautiful double page spread.
Yep.
It comes in and ends with a reveal that there's no Xavier body.
Nope.
Which is cool.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Number seven, the huge fight issue, big revelation about how Quicksilver was at the core of this, how he set it in motion, which is a great swerve.
Mm-hmm.
Great story beat. If you've not read it, sorry, spoilers.
Yep.
But that was you got to read the books before we talk about them. It's a mix of huge action, heartbreaking, sadness, and Wanda and the Hawkeye-Wanda conversation there. And Magneto, he kills Quicksilver at one point in this issue. He kills him because he's so angry, and then Wanda just brings him back to life because she can.
Yeah.
Oh man, it is huge. Most importantly, though, this is the No More Mutants issue.
Yes, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Wanda says no more mutants because she's just fed up with everything. And then number eight is this wild aftermath issue. Wolverine remembering. So this is what you've been talking about this whole time. Having something come out of it.
Yep.
Eight gives you so much.
And, you know, in seven, the words no more mutant. No one knew the impact they were going to have on, you know, comic fandom. It's still people talk about that, you know, and mm-hmm. No More Mutants has become kind of a catchphrase for so many different things. It's almost a meme in and of itself before yeah. there were memes that it's become. And, you know, just the panel, the close up on her lips when she uttered those words was just brilliantly done the way Olivier paced that.
Yeah. The mutants get depowered. We go from millions of mutants to 200.
Yep.
Spidey goes back to normal. Strange gets all messed up by it. Hawkeye's return. Magneto is seemingly depowered there. Wanda's out in hiding. You have this big mutant energy now in space. It's wild. Yep. It's real, real fun.
And it's funny because the timing of us talking about House of M is very coincidental too, not just, you know, because it's, you know, the 80th anniversary, but also because right now in House of X and Powers of Ten by Jonathan Hickman, we're kind of, you know, reinvigorating the X-Men line. He's taking them in a new direction. And these events are directly referenced in these two series that are coming up very, very soon.
Well, then, that's a hot little bit of info. So coming out of this, more specifically in terms of titles and things that were happening in Spider-Man, the other X-Factor, which you mentioned, yep. Generation M, Son of M, the 198, sort of yep. reaching across the X-books, all that decimation, the Ms. Marvel refocus and relaunch for her.
Yep.
That's the Carol Danvers book, which, you know, eventually that would lead to Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. And then I think most importantly, Wolverine remembering his history
yeah.
and who he was. And Joe took a big part in doing all that.
Yeah, and it was just such a great period to be a Marvel fan. And then everything that came out of this had meaning. It drove the respective character groups and teams and, you know, storylines in ways that still had repercussions that we can feel to this day. It wasn't just like a done and one and, oh, we're going to forget about it and change it. No, everything really, like I said, plays up perfectly now. And Jonathan's used a lot of what's going on now and what he's doing in the X-books currently.
I love that. I wanted to pull in a tweet here we have from Karis Pollard, one of our frequent listeners. And she's not a huge X-Men fan. I know that she's told me this, but she read House of M for this. And she says, wow, House of M is outstanding. Never read this before. And it's just incredible. It's beautiful to look at and such an emotional, beautiful, bittersweet story as well. This might be the thing that finally turns me on to the X-Men.
Woohoo!
We gotcha!
Welcome to the X-Men. Hope you survive the experience.
All right, we're going to move to the next year. We're going to move ahead to Civil War. Yep. That's a 7-issue limited series, started May 3rd, 2006 to February 21st, 2007 by Mark Miller, Steve McNiven, Dexter Vines, Maury Halliwell, Chris Eliopoulos, and covers by Steve McNiven. And importantly, I want to point out a very specific cover design.
Yep.
Do you remember how that came about?
That was a combination of, again, big brain Tom Brevoort working with Steve McNiven and the creative team at that point, because he wanted this one to be something different. We knew how special it was. We knew the story that we had on our hands was going to be one that was going to resonate with fans, probably more so than other events. It was very timely in terms of things that were going on in the world. It kind of hit the nerve, that zeitgeist at the time. And Tom wanted something where you could showcase Steve's kind of widescreen artwork, but have something also that was going to be instantly pop off the shelves. You know, Joe Q always says that white is the best color to have on a stand in the background to catch a reader's eye. And that's why white was so heavily used as a focus, you know, on the top and bottom of the covers, with kind of their reflective logo on both sides to really make readers, when as soon as they walked in the comic shop, they could see it, you know, from across the room.
That's really cool. Okay, so at the start of this, you know, we're getting ready for Civil War, but Annihilation is happening separate, yep. like at the same time, which is wild, because that is another whole conversation we can have. Planet Hulk is going on, yep. which will lead into what we talk about with World War Hulk. But, you know, do you remember any of the planning for Civil War?
I do remember. And Civil War was not supposed to happen at this time. This was not going to be the event of that year. The plan was that we were going to go into World War Hulk. Like you said, it was Annihilation was happening, and Bruce, Hulk, Scar, all of them were off, you know, on Sakaar doing the Planet Hulk thing. And that was only supposed to be a very short story. And Greg Pak came into the room with Mark Panisha, who was the editor at the time, and they pitched, here's Planet Hulk and here's World War Hulk. But it just felt very short, like that they were rushing through it. So, you know, we put a pin in that and said, okay, but you know what? That feels like a bigger story. We feel like the Planet Hulk stuff, the Sakaar stuff is a little, should be played out a little bit more. You created this cool world. You created this cool character. Why bring the Hulk back right away? And then as we went through the retreat, it was on the last day that, you know, the seeds of civil war were planted. And that's when we made the decision, like, oh, my God, it would be so much better if we extended Planet Hulk that much, let civil war happen. And when the world should be in that state of disarray when the Hulk finally does come back. So things kind of got switched. And it's like you plan these things so meticulously. And like, here's this year's plan, here's next year's plan. And this was one of the examples where we walked into the room thinking one thing, and we walked out going, man, we got to rejigger our whole publishing plan for the next 12 months.
It's a good problem to have, because this has been one of the perennial bestsellers, most talked about books, influenced, of course, as we've talked about, stuff that hits the screen. We're going to get into favorite moments and stuff like this, but, you know, you're a big art guy. I want to talk about Steve McNiven. His ability to freeze moments is something, you know, I think of Frank Quitely. I think of, you know, some artists can just do it. They can take an image and it feels like time has stopped and you're seeing something. It's so much clarity. It's crisp artwork, great facial acting as well, and brutal action.
Yeah. It's a credit really goes to Mark as well, because whereas Mark is a writer and, you know, one of the best comic writers, you know, out there, he sees himself also as a director, because he's not just writing a script. He's taking into account in his head who the artist is and who the colorist is. And he uses his knowledge and almost sees it as a movie in his screen with them. And then he's able to play to the artist's strengths and direct them in terms of the page layouts, the panel layouts, and really let them do their best work, being the kind of, like, not so much the writer, by getting, but the director who's really pushing them to the best of their abilities that they might not even know it. And he's done it with everybody he's worked with, and here he was at his peak when him and Steve were on the book.
Yeah. Feels very Jeff Loebian to me in some ways. You know, Jeff has that mind as well. You know, smart, great writers working and finding the best for their artists.
Yep.
Oh, it's so good. All right, let's dive into things. The first issue, New Warriors and Nitro.
Yeah.
Man, that's how you start an event.
Yeah. You know, it was always interesting for me, because I'm from Connecticut, you know, small state, Connecticut. And here we go, Stamford, Connecticut being the inciting incident of that. But what's interesting was why Stamford, Connecticut was chosen, because we were in the retreat, and that was where Jeff Loeb went to school when he was a kid.
Oh,
so
we're learning all kinds of stuff I never knew. You know, so New Warriors, they are doing a reality TV show at the time. You mentioned Zeb Wells, Scotty Young coming out of their series, and this team is trying to, like, put on this reality show, get the best shots. And, like, I remember the producer telling Speedball, like, we need you to say that line again. I was like, oh my gosh, it feels so real at this point. And then Nitro is like, oh, you're playing with the big boys now. And he blows up, killing hundreds, which is huge. So after that, which is really interesting, I think a smart storytelling beat is unifying who comes in for the cleanup.
Yep.
You have X-Men, Avengers, disparate heroes who are just there to try to help.
Yeah, it was a tragedy, and the heroes were not able to protect people in this case, but they're heroes being heroes, coming in after the fact and doing what they can.
Yeah, Johnny Storm gets injured, which is really important for the Fantastic Four. Gotta make sure we note Tom Brevoort gets a cameo, if not by name, but by image. Yeah. He used that image for his avatar for so many years. He shows up. The registration gets fast-tracked. And then you have Cap jumping out of the helicarrier. He's like, damn you for making me do this. I love that whole scene. Jumping out of the helicarrier, friggin' surfing a jet.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember when Mark had that in his head when he was talking about it. And you were like, wait, how is Steve going to draw that? And then you saw the final pages come out and you're like, wow, he really nailed it. Scale. I mean, that's something Steve does so, so well.
Yeah. And then the little note afterwards that Cap and the pilot land the plane and he takes the guy out for burgers afterwards. Yeah. I was like, freaking Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
That's first issue.
I know.
Wild.
All in one. Yeah.
Number two is a lot of setup, the breakdowns in relationships.
Spoilers coming in this issue, people, if you haven't read it. I think everybody's read Civil War by this point.
I would hope so. Yeah. Cap Secret Avengers show up. There you get their secret, their special base. Cool. So cool. And of course, the end is Peter Parker revealing his identity to the world.
Yep. I mean, this is how much we believed in this story. It's how much, from our perspective as Marvel, we put out this moment that's never been revealed in the history of comics before in that way. But it also just goes to show the commitment that the characters had to their beliefs and the sides that they chose in Civil War. And it really cemented, like, wow, this is for real. These are, the stakes are extremely high in this book. If Peter Parker is going to reveal his identity to the world, wow, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, the characters choosing their sides. That was a pretty interesting discussion for the editorial team at that time.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of times in the retreats where there's a heated debate and it always gets decided by a vote. And this was when we were choosing sides. There were a lot of votes because people were very torn because everybody has their favorite character and everybody wants their character to be the good guy, to be on the quote-unquote right side of things. And in this case, there was no right or wrong. It was just a lot of people brought their own personal beliefs into it and channeled those beliefs into the characters and were very passionate about making sure that one was on Tony's side or one was on Cap's side.
You know? Do you remember any specific heated discussions?
The Punisher was the biggest one. You know, mm-hmm. Just being the vigilante. If and when he does join the fray, whose side would he be on, and if he did choose a side, which we'll get to in a little bit,
yeah.
How would that side react to him being on their team? Because we also have to put ourselves as editors into those characters' shoes and figure out how they're going to really, you know, to interact,
yeah.
You know? And ultimately, it was Mark's decision, but he took a lot of the conversations to heart when we were debating that all out.
I remember one of the retreats for Secret Invasion. And so we went around the room. It was a similar discussion of who's going to be a Skrull. And there was so much back and forth. And everybody was like, okay, we're going to go around the room. Who's going to be a Skrull? Give us a pick. They were like, Ryan, who do you say? I'm like, I don't know. Gargoyle. I'm like 25 or 6 at that time. It was great. Like Gargoyle. People were like, cool. Next. Yeah. Like, nobody cares about Gargoyle except me.
Yeah, Spider-Woman was a big debate at that point, too.
I would imagine. Yeah. But we're not here to talk about unfortunately.
Nope. Even though we all love Secret Invasion.
It's my fave. All right, so issue number 3, we get that delightful scene of Tony and Emma that starts out with them, like, sort of talking about their history. But it's always going to stick with me, that line from Emma, where were you when our babies were burning?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When she says that to Tony about, like, Genosha and millions of mutants were killed, and this is happening over 200 people. Where were the superheroes then?
Yeah.
Ugh, breaks my heart. We got the secret identities for Captain America, Hercules, Daredevil, and Goliath, which is one of my favorite scenes. Just have, like, four of them
reading their
names, which were just the wildest names. Mm-hmm. You get the big trap, the battle, and Thor's quote-unquote return.
Yes, which was really big for at that point.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, Thor had been gone since Avengers Disassembled.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he'd been gone for two or three years at that point. And I love Avengers Disassembled, that Thor story.
Yep.
One of my all-time favorite Thor stories.
And these are the kind of moments that these events are supposed to have, the ones that really bring the big stuff into the event. And, you know, a lot of times it's hard for the writers who are writing the books at that time because they want those moments in their books, but for the greater good of the Marvel Universe and for the company, sometimes we have to make those decisions to put them into the actual the event series themselves.
Yeah. So number 4 is the continuation of that fight, Thor, the Thor clone,
yes,
going on a rampage, which, yeah, you're just swinging your arm around.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's right. You can't see me. I'm not on camera, but yes, I'm swinging my arm like I'm holding Thor's hammer.
Yep.
I am worthy.
The death of Goliath,
yep.
Which was, you know, was that something how was that discussed in the room?
You know, we knew that there had to be consequences to clone Thor. Is that what we
Ragnarok,
called
Ragnarok, I think later
yeah,
he
was called
Ragnarok
right. when he came back. And you needed to have a character who was going to have some consequence to the fans and to the characters in the actual Marvel Universe. And it was a tough decision to make, and they went back and forth about who the character should be. But just also, you know, for visual impact, like who's going to make sense. And Giant Man, Thor taking down a character of that stature was really the moment that Mark and Steve felt they needed. So.
Yeah, it's brutal, and it's, especially when they have to bury him.
Yeah.
Oof. You have a lot of side switching. You have Sue's letter to Reed, which is, I thought, a really sweet touch that sort of spreads across a couple of pages. And then the new Thunderbolts reveal, which, you know, Steve just coming in there, drawing some gnarly stuff.
Yeah, and the side switching was always interesting, too, because kept fans guessing, you know, if they got upset because their favorite hero was on one side or they didn't believe in what Tony was doing or they supported, you know, a different hero who had sided with Cap. But no, it should have really been on the other side. Once the character started switching sides, like, oh, okay. So, yeah, some minds can be changed, you know, mm-hmm. and it kept them coming back to just you know, see where the heroes might end up and if they were going to switch sides.
Yeah. Number five is Peter versus Tony as things are falling apart. Peter in the sewers with Jester and Jack-O-Lantern is such a brutal fight. And then Punisher comes in.
Done, yeah.
And those just like... Yeah. Like those shots. And I always will remember Jack-O-Lantern's head bursting open. It's intense. You have the reveal of the Negative Zone prison, which I think was such a cool idea.
Yep. And again, not to spoil anything, but we'll be revisiting that very soon too. Again, the events having lasting impacts in the Marvel Universe, we do not forget.
Dun, dun, dun. I don't even know what that is. That's the first time hearing about it. I love it. Issue number six is the 50 States Initiative plan start to form. We get new heroes. We see that Namor and Sue storyline, which is one of my favorites because Namor is just like getting up. He's like just sex oozing off of him. He's so hot. And he comes there and he's like, Susan, that's not why you came here. And he like touches her lip and I was just like, get it.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Punisher killing Goldbug and Plunderer. Now that's the moment you were talking about with Punisher.
Exactly. Like, you know, how do you justify something like that? No matter which side you're on, you know, and the Punisher's a character who is just, you know, extremely controversial. He's always lived in that gray. The heroes have, you know, begrudgingly accepted his presence in certain places. But, you know, that was one that was pretty brutal and also, you know, caused a lot of stir among the fan community about, you know, who is Frank and what is he doing and why is he here?
Yeah. Yeah. And Cap's like, what the hell was I thinking?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You get that fight, which is not really a fight. It's more Steve.
A beatdown. Yeah.
He's just angry. The prison break surprises with Hulkling and you get that like last moment, like, all right, let's get ready to rumble. Two sides facing off, which is so cool.
The 50 State Initiative was also an interesting thing because, you know, in these retreats, Dan Slott, who knows Marvel continuity and Marvel history back and forth and loves every character, you know, had all kinds of ideas. And Dan is always very, you know, you can see it. He gets very, you know, visceral and you can see the emotion dripping off in these retreats. And he always likes to raise his hand. Ooh, I got an idea. I got an idea.
That was
and
a good Dan impression.
I remember when the 50 State Initiative came up, Dan had ideas for like every character, every state. What do we put this character in this state and this character? Oklahoma, you know, Oregon, Washington, Maine. Look, how about this? And like he combined geography with his massive knowledge of these Marvel characters and came up with these great, like, kind of character map for the 50 State Initiative. And I always still associate myself him with that.
I don't think we ever revealed every team for every state.
No, I don't think we did.
Someday, if only it was an anniversary and we could go back to that. Anyway, number seven, we have the giant battle, Spider-Man Shining, which I think is really cool because he's gone through so much. And then you have this just this moment where he's like hitting everyone. You see, yeah, he may be that like the smaller guy in the fight, but he is Spider-Man.
Yep.
Such an impact. Namor arrives. I love that shot. It reminds me of the Lord of the Rings movies, you know, when Gandalf comes in and like he's got the Rohirrim. Ah, so good. Then the Fantastic Four reconcile a bit. My favorite moment maybe is Hercules fighting the clone Thor. And he says, thou art no Thor, smashing his head in. So good. Cap beats Tony. Civilians get involved. The fight sort of ends.
Yep.
And you start to get those little pieces that then push us forward. Punisher picking up the mask. Tony is the boss of S.H.I.E.L.D. That was like, boom. Yep. That's a big ending.
It was a big ending. And, you know, looking back at that time, you know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, page count and how big can it be and how we're going to end and how much could we fit in. And, you know, the book had to ship on time. It had already been solicited, but we had to go in and make the difficult decision that, no, we were not going to get a fill-in artist. We were going to let Mark and Steve tell their story no matter what time Steve needed. And if the book was going to be late, we were going to let it be late. And we had other spinoffs that were tied into Ship 7 shipping on time. But I think, you know, in the end, we decided, you know, for the best possible trade, for the just given the importance of this store, we knew the impact it was going to have on the Marvel future, that we decided to let Steve take the time they needed. And I think it was a controversial at the time. We got a lot of crap for it. But in the end, it was the right decision.
100% the right decision. Coming out of Civil War, of course, there's Spider-Man Back in Black.
Yep.
That is very specifically pulled right after those events. Brand New Day, The Initiative, Mighty Avengers, Iron Man, Director of S.H.I.E.L.D., Thunderbolts, Punisher, Cap. It spawned a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And look what happened to Captain America right after, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Captain America dies very shortly afterwards.
That was the end of the retreat, actually.
Yeah.
Where Ed Brubaker had to leave early. And he said something along the lines of, look, I got to go, but while I'm gone, nobody mess with Cap. And then we were having the debate, and then we decided within the last hour, like, yeah, you know what, to really coming out of this, Cap's really, his death would mean a lot, you know, especially given the themes of the story and the side that he stood for, and it would be great storytelling. And Tom Brevoort had the unenviable job of going and calling Ed Brubaker and saying, yeah, well, you know how you said not to mess with Cap? We decided we're going to kill him.
What was Ed's answer? Did he just hang up on him?
I don't remember. You got to talk to Tom about that one.
Oh, boy. But look, I think Ed told such a great story with Bucky and with like the evolution of how that went.
Yep.
Jeff got to tell some really great stories out of that. It was good. It was really good. We do have some tweets in here, a lot of Civil War connections. And, you know, actually, Jiggy Cruz, he says, despite the delays back then, I really appreciated Civil War having Mark Miller and Steve McNiven finish the entire series together as a team. Great decision by Marvel to let Steve finish it.
Yeah, as we just talked about. Yeah, well, thank you, Jiggy. Go. We agree.
Yeah. Karis, once again, she joins in. She says, the Twin URC this month was fun. Civil War was some of the first comics I read. I did the classic move from film to comics with them.
Good.
And now she's a weekly Wednesday warrior. So it's cool to reread with a bunch more context. I've had fun coloring a load of panels off the Marvel Color Your Own app as well.
Oh, very cool.
Which is great. And Steve's art really lends itself to coloring. And his lines are so tight.
Yep, exactly. And then, you know, what Maury Hollowell did in coloring him in that series was just breathtaking. He added mood and tone and the hues that he brought. He really added the emotion through the color.
Yeah. All right. Our last event to talk about is World War Hulk. It's a 5-issue series, started June 13th, 2007, ended November 14th, 2007, by Greg Pak, John Romita Jr., Klaus Janson, Christina Strain, and Chris Eliopoulos. I mean, looking at that, I was like, oh, great. Those are all like the best.
Yep.
Putting the best of the best on this book. So it's important to note that this really comes out of Planet Hulk, as you had mentioned previously.
Yep.
There's actually a setup story. Incredible Hulk 88 through 91 is the Peace in Our Time arc.
Yes.
And that's the story where Hulk is sent off Earth by Reed, Tony, you know, Doctor Strange, Black Bolt. That's very kind of key, and it's included in a lot of the collections, but it sets up how he gets to why he goes to Planet Hulk. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Planet Hulk is issues 92 through 105. Hulk on this alien planet, he is sort of depowered, he rises up, and when he has everything, it all falls apart.
Yep.
The planet explodes, and he thinks it's because of Reed and Tony and Doctor Strange and Black Bolt. So World War Hulk is him coming back for revenge.
Yep.
So you had pushed this off
a year.
What had changed? Had anything changed in that year?
A lot of change. You know, Civil War had begun. There was a lot of discourse in the Marvel Universe. You know, there were different things that were happening. And this is going back to the comment I made earlier about figuring out where some of the moments would be. Even though Greg and Mark had planned World War Hulk for so long, there was the debate of should the Hulk come back at the end of Civil War. With the Marvel Universe at its worst, with the heroes having just pulled themselves apart for the most part, what would happen if the Hulk showed up? And that storyline was talked about. And Mark was actually a little bit interested in kind of playing with that. But in the end, it was decided, he decided for the better of his story, and we decided for the better of Greg's story in the Marvel Universe, that World War Hulk should stand on its own.
Yeah, there's a what if there. If we haven't done it already, what if Hulk returned during Civil War just to see? Oof.
Yeah, you know, Tom Brevoort could probably tell the story, but in throwing out ideas, Mark said, well, if I did have the Hulk come back in my in Civil War, here's kind of what I would have done. And he had the Hulk come back from to Earth with kind of the warriors from Sakaar. But they were more kind of, as he put them, hillbilly Hulks. And it actually, since it didn't happen, he went and he took that story and he put it into Old Man Logan later. So a good idea never goes to waste.
Well, look at that. Yeah. I am glad he did it there and not as part of this. Yeah. I think that wouldn't have fit very well, but it works very well in Old Man Logan. Let's just dive right into the book. First issue, you have Hulk taking out Black Bolt, which is such a baller move to take out one of the most powerful characters
in Marvel. And nobody does superhero fights and add power and scale to comics like John Romita. I mean, he's been doing this for so long. He's the ultimate storyteller. It just moves, and that fight was just so well done.
Yeah. And then he has Black Bolt, he addresses the world holding up Black Bolt's body.
Yep.
What a move. You get the Hulkbuster Iron Man, like this new souped up version, and the plea to Sentry, like bringing the Sentry into this, which I thought was really great because of the history that, you know, we had told of Sentry and Hulk and how important they were to each other.
Yeah, their relationship.
Yeah. And then that I can close my eyes and I can picture the panels of the destruction of Avengers Tower with the Sentry Tower on top of it falling down. It's like it's so intense. Mm-hmm. Number two is The Avengers and the Fantastic Four versus Hulk and the Warbound. Rick Jones trying to reason with the Hulk. General Ross rolling up at the end. But it's just, you know, big old punch him up, smash him up.
And, you know, the Warbound, those characters that, you know, that Greg created in Planet Hulk and brought here have also gone on to be some of the more popular characters in many different places at Marvel, including, you know, Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, for sure. Number three is Hulk versus the military, which I'm just like, oh, you poor babies. Yeah. What are you doing?
You don't know what you're getting up against, but good for you.
Yeah. Strange starts to break through to Banner in this really great astral plane scene. Then Hulk breaks Strange's hand.
Yeah. Oh, brutal. I still remember that scene when you opened. I remember seeing the pencils when they came in, and I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. Then Hulk taking over Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. So that was such a fun touch. Yeah. And of course, it makes
arena.
Sense as an arena. But also, you know, you have guys like Greg and Johnny who are New Yorkers.
Yeah.
And like it felt like such a New York touch.
Yeah.
You know, so important.
We always say that, you know, New York is a character that's central to Marvel Comics, the Marvel stories, and the Marvel Universe. And as two New Yorkers, they were able to bring their experiences and make it just feel so natural.
Yeah. And the end of that issue is so fun with Doctor Strange powering up with this potion and becomes, like, gets powdered by the demon. Yeah. Strange smash!
Yep.
He's got the weird hands, which is just so gnarly. Issue number four is Hulk versus souped up Strange.
Yep.
Hulk saves, again, Greg's such a smart storyteller, having Hulk save people when Strange almost like hulks out and kills them. You don't see Hulk kill any civilians in this. He goes very targeted to the people he's going after. Hulk forces the Illuminati to fight gladiator style, and it ends with Hulk giving thumbs down and Sentry
shooting
in. Yeah. Johnny draws a hell of a Sentry too. Number five is Sentry versus Hulk in a massive battle, destroying much of Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
They, and to be clear, they have evacuated Manhattan.
Yes,
that was
so
a very important story point.
Yes, it was. From the moment that the thumbs down came, we knew that there was going to be utter chaos. And, you know, but yeah, the evacuation, like we can't have them kill all these people. You know, it's Manhattan, it's full of people. So that was a very, you know, crucial plot point when we were working with Greg.
Yeah. And the big Meek revelation in there of how he had orchestrated this, how he let this happen and destroyed Hulk's life and destroyed their planet and everything. And he just wanted Hulk to not be. He wanted Hulk to remain Hulk, not get soft and calm down and stuff. I had to pull the quote, "I'll hate you forever, almost as much as I hate myself." And that's what Hulk says to Meek. So heartbreaking. And then that "I'll never leave you" moment as, you know, Hulk is being taken down by Iron Man. And in his mind, he is seeing the love of his life who was killed. It's beautiful.
Yeah, the whole story in itself is orchestrated so well.
Coming out of this, One More Day, Incredible Hercules, Messiah Complex, a lot of events that just happened out after this. Do you have anything more you remember from World War Hulk time?
You know, I really remember that we had so much to pack into these issues. Because if you're looking at it, you know, House of M was 8 issues, Civil War was 7 issues, World War Hulk was 5 issues. And even, you know, when you have a master like Johnny drawing it, there was so much that Greg wanted to put into these stories. I just remember John would get the scripts, like, how am I supposed to draw all this kind of stuff, you know? And, you know, they pulled it off. There were some extra pages in those issues. But I just remember, like John just wanting to draw these massive scale stories, but being limited by page count, but doing such an amazing job, just given a lot of those moments you just listed.
Yeah. All right. So as we've been doing in these Twim URC episodes, I want to give a quick look at what the decade looked like at the beginning, at the end. And I will tell you, I cannot list all the books coming out because we started putting out a lot of comic books. In January of 2000, we had 46 comics out that month, which, you know, starts to really ramp up at that point. But December 2009, over 90 Marvel comics published.
Wow, double.
With stuff in plus. So that's like the superhero stuff, plus stuff like The Stand, Anita Blake, Dark Tower, books from Soleil, Ender's Game, and more. That's a lot of comics.
Wow, yeah.
And you think about where we were when we started doing the Twim URC a couple months ago, and we, you know, we're like 12 books, 20 books, whatever it was. It's wild.
No, and that really speaks to, you know, the strength of Marvel at that time, the quote-unquote Project Rebirth, when Bill Jemis came on as publisher, Joe Q was editor-in-chief, you know, what they were able to do and the success that they were able to take with things like Marvel Knights and expand it out to the Marvel Universe and really reinvigorate the line, get the fans excited again, and really just had a concise publishing plan that grew.
Heck yeah. And then here we are in the teens.
Oh, my God.
That's going to be our next episode. Wow. For TwimURC. I don't know what to pick. Because now we're like so contemporary.
I know.
I've read every single book we put out.
That's come out in the last decade. In the last decade.
Mm-hmm. I can't. It's so many comics. It's great. We'll figure it out. Yep. That'll be before in the next month or two. Mm-hmm. And then we've been talking about maybe doing a holiday special.
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah, that'll be the last one of the year. And we hope you guys enjoy this. I mean, I hear from y'all and you dig it. Oh. There's one last tweet in here. Forgot to read it. One from RP67, Buffy Paizan 67 says, I think we all know Civil War takes first, with Secret Invasion a close second. Anyway, can we get an animated movie of these three events? They did an animated Planet Hulk.
They did, yep.
Mm-hmm. But I would imagine an animated of any of these.
You had a live action Civil War movie this that was true. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, even an animated one could even have more characters and more possibilities.
Exactly.
That's a wrap for this TwimURC. Of course, listen to This Week of Marvel every week for more stuff. CB, where are they going to find you?
At CB Cebulski on Twitter.
And Instagram, too.
Instagram, too. That's right. Yep.
That's where I found out you had the chicken sandwich.
Yeah, that's right.
It's great. Mm-hmm. I'm Ryan.
And I'm CB.
And this is Marvel.
Your universe.